Welcome to Sales Talk for CEOs. I'm glad you're here. I'll be interviewing CEOs who have successfully scaled their B2B sales organization. In each episode, I'll start by uncovering the sales background of each CEO, dig into the strategies they use to build their sales organization, and wrap it up with what the future holds. We'll cover the good, the bad, and the ugly of scaling a sales organization. I'm your host, Alice Hyman. Welcome to the show. So who out there doesn't need more leads? I know that there's no one that's going to say that, right, May?
Totally. Everyone wants more leads.
So I'm excited to have May Sow here today with me from Lead IQ. And Lead IQ does just that. It helps make sure your team has plenty of leads, but we'll get into that in a minute. Welcome to the show, May.
Thank you, Alice. Thanks for having me.
It's my pleasure. I have been watching your company for many years now. As we were talking about before we started recording, I think years ago at either Sales 3.0 or Dreamforce or something, it was like maybe 2017, we met. You guys were just starting up and we chatted about it. And I have been watching you grow ever since. It has just been awesome. And now here you are 7 years into this.
Yes, it's sometimes when you are having fun, it passed pretty fast. Can't believe it's been 7 years, but yes.
Right, it goes so fast. So you started this business 7 years ago with your co-founders. What were you doing right before you decided there was a need in the marketplace for Lead IQ?
Yeah, I was a former product manager at Oracle, actually. That was my first background. I was working in product management. I was there for about 10 years.
Yeah.
Before then, I moved over to start the entrepreneurship journey. So I joined my co-founder then. At that point of time, we were working on a messaging, almost like a collaboration system, something like Slack. But We invented to build it for external collaboration system. So for salespeople to be able to chat with their clients, they can just click on they can share a public URL where people can click on it. Mm-hmm. And inbound leads, people can chat with the salespeople. So I started interviewing a lot of salespeople. Would you use this messaging system? Would you let people chat with you? Yeah. And the interesting thing was that most people were telling us, yes, I would, but if someone messaged me, I would want to know who that person is. Let's say you are Alice. Mm-hmm. Who's Alice? What's her title? What company does she work for? Because most people only leave name or maybe email address. How big the company is, what's the company industry? So we started trying to meet that requirement and started doing enrichment.
Okay.
And before you know it, more people were interested in the enrichment stuff than the messaging system itself. So I have this list of all of my inbound leads. Can you enrich this lead information? That's how Lead IQ evolved, starting from enrichment. And the next thing we are hearing from our customers, this is great, but I don't have enough inbound leads. I need more leads like this. How can I? How can you help us to find more people with similar titles? And over the past 7 years, basically, we've just been listening to our customers, understanding what do they need, and we are focusing more on the top of the funnel to help them with the sales pipeline, get more pipeline, and now we are focusing more for sales development reps and account executives who need whose responsibility is bringing sales pipeline to the company, and we make their workflow more efficient. What do you need to do, and how can we help you to make sure you get that pipeline in such a more efficient workflow, being able to personalize and make it really efficient as well.
Yeah, absolutely. The tool is amazing. And I know many of my clients use it and love it. So back when you first started, did you guys kind of just quit your jobs and decide to do this messaging tool? Or was it kind of an offshoot of something else that you were doing?
I joined my co-founder back then. He and another founder has already started it. and I joined with founder. So I joined a little bit late, but yes, I decided that I wanted to, you know, join a small company, see what we can do and make that happen. And so I resigned from Oracle and joined them.
So as you were coming into this and seeing, okay, look, I've been a product manager. They probably had some strengths in developing the product as well and actually coding it possibly, right? And then you're out there interviewing people, not exactly selling, but it is selling because you're trying to find out, right? Can we sell this? So did you do a lot of that work or did the other founders, who was out there talking to the people who might buy your product to get the information that you needed?
Yeah, it was me. So my co-founder was focusing on the product and the technology then. And I was the one who's speaking to a lot of the customers, understanding what do they need and trying to sell in the beginning. So our very first customers, pay us $75 a month. Mm-hmm. He found us online and then we started talking to more customers. Someone told us we were using another tool to do this. If you could do what this tool does, I will do it for you and I'll pay you $500 a month. That's how it started. Like, okay, we'll build it.
We'll build it. Right.
Yeah. So, and then we built what he asked. I came back to him. I still remember these very two first customers very well in my mind. I'm still in touch with them on LinkedIn.
Oh,
and,
nice. Yeah.
And once we built it, I came back to him like, okay, we built what you asked for. Now would you switch to us? And then he switched to us. I think at that point of time, he was using this tool called sellhack.com. So we started building and it just goes that way. We just keep talking to customers that you need. Can we help you solve your problem? And then in the early days, really founders have to sell because it's hard to get a seller who can listen and then decides what product to build and being able to build that quickly. So I think I did the selling for about the first year or the first year for the company. Then after that, so we launched LeadIQ in April 2015. So almost at the end of 2015, that's when we first hired our very first marketing person. You may have heard his name is Ryan O'Hara. He's been with the company.
Yes.
As well. And he is very experienced at prospecting. That's how when we first started our outbound motion, which became the really like the sales foundation for LeadIQ as well. And he just does a lot of prospecting, message a lot of people, and then we talk to the people. But we try to stand out. We always personalize every single message. Ryan would like be on his piano singing songs for the prospects, trying to get a meeting. We still have some of those like early videos as well.
And if I remember correctly, when he showed up at a trade show, he always had a suit on with some fancy, you know, design on it. So he stood out from the crowd.
I think that was the early days, exactly. That's what we had to do. It's hard to get noticed as a small startup with no name. So we tried to stand out. We tried to get attention from people and then like getting people's trust. Hey, what do you do? This is what we can do to help you. Yeah. And over time, by 2016, that's when we started building our own sales development team. We hired our first SDR. Then soon we hired our first AE. And that's how we started like building the foundation to build the sales pipeline. What we realized is that as a startup, it's actually very critical to build your outbound team very early.
Yes.
There are many companies who can be probably lucky enough and to get a huge inbound leads. Mm-hmm. But most startups don't have that luxury. You are new, no one knows about you. You have to tell people about you, right? And the only way to do that, you have to build an outbound motion, be very targeted. Who are the people who will be benefiting from your services and reach out? And we built that very early. It helps, of course, that our software helps with that as well.
Yes.
We use our own product internally. Right. And that's how we actually have built the foundation of the company. We keep growing our SDR team.
So in the early, let's say like, you know, first 3 to 5 years where you were building this, when they would get the leads, were you still then as the founder, one of the founders still talking to the customer and closing those deals?
Yeah, I think I did that for almost the first 1 year or 2 years of the company. Mm-hmm. And then once we hired our first AE, he took over most of that because he was better at following up than me. I think what I realized sometimes with sales is a lot of following up.
Yes.
Right? In the early days when you don't have so many things to do, it's easier to follow up and making sure you focus. Mm-hmm. After a while, you have to both maintain your customers as well as following up. So that hunting mentality is a full-time job. If you don't have enough time to hunt and keep doing that. So I think it's time to hire a full-time person to focus on doing that. It will really, really help.
Well, as the CEO of the company, you have many things to do. Like you said in the beginning, it's not as much, but then as you start growing things, now you've got existing customers that you have to think about. You've also maybe got going out for investment rounds. And I think you guys fairly early were looking for investors. So you got involved in that. And you just simply can't do all of it, right? And so that's when you want to find someone who's going to go ahead and do that. Now, you did really well in the beginning and got a lot of people interested. And like you said, you got Ryan pretty early on. But had you had any sales experience in your background that helped you be able to be the first seller for your company?
No, I have no sales background. But I think what works in the beginning is that it's not about selling. It's about finding out the person's pain point and meeting their requirements, which is that's actually the essence of sales, right? It's can you actually figure out what's the pain points and how can you solve their problem? Mm-hmm. Then after that, of course, the second piece of sales is persistence, resilience, and following up. Because their time is not always aligned with your time.
Right.
But what works is because I'm just there really listening and trying to understand what's your pain points today. Like our first customer and second customers, we are using this tool right now, but this tool doesn't do this and this and this. If you can do it for us, I'll switch. I'm like, heard you, we're on it, we do it, then we come back to you. We heard you, now we build it.
Yeah.
Like, would you now want to switch to us? But so I think that's the beauty of being a founder in the early days, being able to build that product. We are able to pivot and move so fast and build that. It's a little harder once you are a salesperson. You don't have that power or authority. You can't change the product as fast. You have to sell what's been built, right? Because there are other customers in it. So if a customer will give you some objections, you need to be able to counter the objection a different way. So I think in the early days, it works because we are still molding the product to what the customer is needing. But essentially, selling is about trying to make what do you need and what do we have? Can we make it work, right?
That's right. And that's really always what sales is about, the fit, right? Does our solution fit your need? And how can we help you grow and meet your goals? Because when we can do that, you know, then we've done our job versus force fitting it. And I think some people get, you know, very confused about sales sometimes. This is why I love when founders are out selling. That founder-led sales is really about helping. Hey, can we help? We think we can solve this problem. Do you have it? Yeah. Oh, you have it? Okay. Tell us more about that problem. Oh, yeah, we can solve that. You know, what else do you need? Oh yeah, let me see if we can solve that too, right? And you work together to discuss things and then solve. And then somehow sales turns into this other kind of thing, which we don't want it to be, right? We still want our marketing and sales teams and all the communication, like you said, very personalized about what are your problems? Maybe we can solve them. We don't know yet. Let's have a conversation and see if we can solve them. And then once the salespeople have that conversation, we want them to know when they're not a good fit so they walk away and don't waste anybody's time. And we also want them to know when they are a good fit, but there may be objections that need to be handled or some consensus building, which is huge right now, where these larger companies have so many people involved in trying to make these decisions, right? And we have to bring them to consensus. So not only do our salespeople need to know how to do all of that, they also need to know how to bring their senior leaders in as appropriate, right, to move these deals forward. So let's move to that for a minute, because, you know, as the founder, you were selling, and then you were hiring sales and marketing people and managing them. And now I'm sure you have someone who manages the salespeople for you, and you're not doing that anymore. Yet you still have a role in sales, and your sales team still needs you sometimes, and they have to use you properly. So let's talk about let's start with what's the current structure of your sales organization, and then how do they leverage you in your role in sales, being the CEO and having lots of other things to do, but needing to be there at times to support them. So what does the structure of your current organization look like?
Yeah, certainly. So we very recently hired a new go-to-market leader, GTM, and our new COO. His name is Ben Kwan. He's wonderful. And he's now leading both sales and marketing. Great. So both sales and marketing are reporting up to him. We have a VP of sales reporting to Ben. And basically under the VP of sales, then we started having a different structure. There's a sales manager, one running commercial team, one running mid-market team. So yes, it's a little bit more layered. But they're there because they are much better than me to at creating the structure and the processes and building a sales enablement team, thinking through the, you know, how do we divide the territory, the pipeline, and making sure that everybody is trained and have enough pipeline to go after. So as the sales team grows, there's a lot of these processes that just gets more complex. But eventually, once we have a communication with the person and with the team, it's back to like, what do you need? Can we help you? And I ask my team all the time, if I can help in any deal, bring me in. Especially, I ask them to introduce me. I introduce me as one of the founder, and I'm responsible for the product because I do care about what's their pain points. How are they currently solving their outbound pipeline? Can our product help? And it helps me to think through the product directions and features as well. And I'm hearing it from them. We really care about outbound, and sometimes people think of outbound in a really gray shade, that outbound is spamming. A lot of people cold calling, identifying cold calling and cold emailing as more like spam. And many people don't like to be cold call and cold email. Right. And the reason is that many people stop personalizing and doing research, and they're just uploading a list, whether this is relevant or not, and they're just bombarding. That kills it for the entire industry, for the business, right?
It really does. I mean, no one wants another email in their inbox. No one wants another message on their voicemail or another spammy LinkedIn, right? If you have something that can intrigue them, yes, they want it, but they don't just want another message. Hi, you know, I'm Alice and my company does blah, blah, blah. And we do da, da, da. Do you want to get on a call with me? No, that's an instant delete. And yet we get those in our inbox 5, 6, 10 times a day.
Exactly. So what really every company needs to do, they really need to actually train their sales team to be able to find triggers, insights, to research, and then personalize. That's not easy, of course, but the company that does that will get a lot of benefits. Mm-hmm. Right? And that's what we are, that's our mission, that's our vision, that's where we want to build our product to be able to help every sales team to do that.
Those trigger events are key because if we know, for different companies, it's different. It might be that they're hiring salespeople. It could be that they've just purchased Salesforce.com. It could be that they have taken on an investment. Those are all different types of trigger events, depending on what you're selling, right? You're watching for those trigger events. And it could even be that they just hired a new CRO or they just hired a new CEO. Those could be trigger events. And if we're watching for those, right?
Yes.
It makes it so much easier.
Totally. And that's where we really need to educate a lot of our customers too, because sometimes they don't do that.
No.
Like they leave it all to the SDR and sales reps to do their outbound. But through Lead IQ, we are helping them. We really want them to use these trigger events, and we are making the workflow much easier. Then use that trigger events to personalize a message and then send it out. Be very specific with every single reach out. And that's what we are passionate. And I believe when you're getting to customers, you need to really get into what's the goal. How do you add value? How do you change their business? It's not just, oh, we have this product. Do you want to buy it or not? But what's the pain point? What are you solving? What's the what's the end result that you'll be getting if you adopt this methodology, if you adopt this platform. So we try to do that. And yeah, it's a journey, to be honest, you know, because it's a journey for us as a team. It's a journey for our customers. It's a journey we are undertaking together.
Yeah. And when your team is selling to a company that's 10 to 100 times your size, they need your support on that, right? Because in order to really make it sticky, yes, they can talk to the sales enablement people and maybe the VP of sales and the people who have the budget to buy it. But to make it really sticky and have someone above that level understanding why this is so critical to the sales team and why it's going to speed up their sales process, shorten the sales cycle, you know, really make their work easier so we don't need as many people and the people we have can do such a better job, right? And at that point, if you or one of the other senior leaders, because now you have a CRO you mentioned that just came in, if they can then talk with others at their level more about the bigger picture and the strategy, it just makes that sale so much more, you know, much more of a partner type of activity versus just selling something.
Yes, totally. I think because they have the same hat, right? They're thinking from the same mindset, like what's actually the goal? What do the other person's cares about? It's back to understanding the person's pain point and being able to solve it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So you and the other founders and the CRO, I mean, who gets involved of your senior team? Who gets involved with sales at your company? And what kinds of triggers do the sales team have that bring you one of your senior leaders in?
So my co-founder actually left the company a few years ago. So I'm kind of a solo founder right now. That's part of the trigger. And I realized that I don't have the experience to continue scaling the company. So by bringing in someone with a lot more experience, someone like Ben, which is our new COO right now, he's been through this before. He's been through a couple of companies' journey and scaling from our size to a much larger size. So we are learning to him. I think our entire company too is very excited that there's someone who's been through that before, and we are learning through his experience, because to him it's like, oh, I've done this before. I know what the next chapter is going to look like. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So then the sales team can utilize him or any of the other senior leaders, just depending on what's happening next for their customer.
Yes.
Now, you have done something that I really respect, and we were talking about this before we started recording. You've grown your team tremendously. I mean, I guess, you know, probably since the early days, you've probably quadrupled in size in terms of the number of people that work for you.
Yes, we have been fortunate to be able to grow our team. And we have actually taken the deliberate decision to grow our team to be globally, remotely. That's not an easy decision, but now we have over 150 people in 33 different countries.
Wow.
So it is both a benefit, a strength, as well as a struggle that we are going through. The benefit is just that talent is much easier to find when you are expanding the pool pipeline. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of people in many different places that you can find if you are not just looking in one single place. The challenge is, of course, communication, collaboration, and we are going through this, we're going through this period as well, trying to re-innovate the way the company communicate, the way the company operating cadence should be to get everybody still in sync and asynchronously collaborating. But what it has done to us is actually a wonderful diversity and different perspective and opinion, which I think is also making us stronger as a company.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, your focus on diversity is commendable. Many CEOs want to diversify their workforce and especially want to diversify their market, their sales and marketing teams, right? So we, especially if we're only looking in the US, our sales teams tend to be a lot of white men. Let's face it, that's what we've got, right? And that's because that's the pool that we're looking in. And when we specifically go out and try to hire more diversity, we have to first of all, we have to have a more diverse candidate pool, because if we just put it out there, who's going to apply is going to be the same old people that always apply, and they're not going to be a diverse candidate pool. Now, the fact that you're in 33 different countries helps you out immediately, right? Because now you have diversity just by the simple fact that you've got different cultures, different languages. And then, you know, we've got to look at gender as well. So talk about some of the things that you have done specifically to attract diverse candidates to your company, and then, you know, inspire them to want to join because, you know, of how great the company is, but also this great diversity. And then how do you make them feel welcome and included?
Yeah, the inclusion is an important piece. I think you got it there. I heard this from someone else actually, so I need to give the credits. I'm forgetting her name right now, but I heard her speak in one of the sales conference. If I remember the name, I will I'll look it up after this and I'll send you the names. If we should give the credit to her. But she said that the difference between diversity and inclusion, and it stuck with me, right? Diversity is like getting invited to a party. But inclusion is getting asked to dance in a party, right? So sometimes like people focus on diversity and you get invited in a party, but in the party, you feel like you can't sometimes feel like you are.
You stand in the corner, no, right? Yeah, no one asks you to dance. You're just exactly. No one talks to you. Yeah.
Sometimes you don't feel fit in, right? Like, and then no one talks to you. And I think that's the part that the inclusion is important, and the more diverse you are. And sometimes it's hard to start being diverse when to start that first step. So I think one of our value in a company is actually empathy first. Mm-hmm. And try to put it there, right? In order to make everybody feel included, we need to have empathy. We have such a different culture, different background from the 30 to 50. Countries. Sometimes that you don't understand what the other person's perspective. Sometimes it's like little things that they're just used to speak that way, and it's taken out of context. So we always ask for empathy first, and especially to Slack channel is really hard. There's a little bit of minor thing, but a couple of things we're doing that makes that happen. We hired our head of talent, not in the US. So our head of talent is actually based in Singapore. He's originally from India origin. So just in the leadership team as well, we have such a different perspective. And he keeps challenging us with different perspective whenever we want to do something. Like, what do you think this way? Because having that different perspective is like, okay, now maybe he's right. But without, if in the beginning, if even the management team itself is not diverse, you don't have that perspective. By having that different, our head of talent, he's the one who's pushing for global remote. He's pushing for global benefit package. And it's like, okay, that seems like that makes sense. Before that, there is no enough representation from the other global part. A lot of things are centered around the US. We'll think to benefits because we are here, we can't see it from the other person's perspective.
Right.
So I think it's important, right? First of all, like even the team that's making decisions should be diverse. Because without that, the people who are being represented doesn't have representation.
Well, exactly. So if you're just thinking, okay, so you know, not to pick on anyone, but I'm just saying, so let's say we have a senior leadership team that's all white men and maybe one white woman. So that's the perspective we have, right? And we're all based in the US, right? So when we start thinking about things like hiring, the people we know look and act like us, and we go out and ask them to send us candidates. So they send us people who look and act like us, right? And then when we want to provide benefits, we provide benefits to people in the same way that we provide benefits to ourselves, because that's in the US. So it's important what you said. It's like, okay, first of all, our leadership team is diverse, and we worked hard to create that diversity at the top. We chose a leader that for diverse for talent that's outside of the country, so already has another perspective. So working hard at choosing the right leaders to help us make this happen, and of course being in Singapore and understanding other countries, knowing hey, the benefits that work in the U.S. don't work in these other countries. We're going to have to do that differently. The way people communicate is different, and that is a big challenge that we have to work on together. And that's why empathy first, like. Don't automatically assume someone's being mean or hurtful. That may just be their very straight direct forward communication style, which has nothing to do with you or anybody's feelings. And so we have to consider this, you know, first build an example on the leadership team of diversity, choose the right people, help them know that it's a focus and look outward. And then know that we have to use empathy because we have all these different cultures now that have to work together and communicate. And that's something that, right, is harder to do. So those are all good things. Now, I've also noticed, though, because on LinkedIn, as we watch you grow, you do announce who you hire. Even within the U.S., you have really done a great job of gender balance. You have hired a lot of women in these upper-level positions. So how did you, you know, decide to focus on that? And then how did you attract them and convince them to come into this environment?
I think it's the empathy first, the people that we build. We just treat women and men very equally. And I would say probably it helps that we happen to have a women CEO as well. Yes. That I think that somewhat attracts some of the women, right? That means some men doesn't want to work for women. I just know that for a fact, right? And the fact that we were able to attract the man who comes to work for our company, they think that women and men are equal and do not see it that way, right? So I think, and we give everyone the same opportunity and we try to make everybody just feel equal. We still have this problem because in the sales and account executive side, somehow there's just more men candidates. There's less women candidates. We are not fully diverse yet as well, right? But I think we just try, and by speaking to as many, we try to participate with some women girls club, some of the women initiative, just to continue having
women that revenue. Right. I know you're in some of these other groups where you can put out the word that you're hiring and then you have a candidate pool that, you know, to choose from. Yeah,
exactly. So I think the initiative has to start from the beginning, just like to widen the pool. Just back to my original example, the management team needs to be, because the first easiest choice was like originally a lot of people didn't understand some of these choices too, right? Because like, why are we having someone who's outside the US in the management team? Because it's a little bit harder. He has to wake up late for some of the team. Traveling is a little harder. But unless we make some of this effort, it will just not happen. Same thing, I think we have to go out of the way to think to a different perspective, and can we make this work a different way to bring in that city?
Well, we know from all the studies that have been done that our buyers want to buy from a more diverse pool, right? The buyers are diverse and they want to buy from people that are like them, you know. So it's important to do it. It's just not as easy. I think the first step, though, for anyone who's trying to do this is just decide with your senior team that you're going to do it and make it a focus, right? And then look around you and see if there's no diversity. Get some diversity on that leadership team, right? Just like get started there.
Exactly, right. Because the leadership team is easier to control, and then people attract other people. The more women we bring into the company, attract more women, right? It has to just start small, start from what you can control, and it's a ripple effect.
Yeah. And then once they're in, help them feel comfortable, empathy first, and open conversations about it, and making sure that people are not just invited to the party, but they get to have conversations. And like you said, they get to dance, you know, they're included, not just invited.
Correct. I mean, and one simple example, I still remember this, like in the early days, we have 5 people in the office at that point of time in New Hampshire. 1 was women, 4 was men. And there's a big discussion. There's 2 restrooms. So, right. And there's a big discussion kind of like, well, there's 4 people who's a man. So, you know, we should just have, there's 4 people who's a man. So we should have just the 2 to be more gender equal restroom. That everybody can use it, or should we have like 1 which is a woman and 1 is a man restroom? That way, then the woman has 1 exclusive restroom for her, and the 4 men has to share 1 bathroom. So there's a little bit of a debate just on the small things,
it's
like
a
that.
Small thing, right?
Thing, right? because do we go by man gender or do we go by numbers? But then the man is so not clean, right?
Right. He's not
keeping the bathroom in a good proper stage that the women feel like I have to keep cleaning up after them. It's like, So then in the end, one for women, one for men. Because at least you guys have to keep it clean. So it's little decisions like that. Sometimes you have to do it from the other perspective. Does the woman feel included or not? Because she's the minority. Does she feel like she has to keep cleaning up after everyone because it's the only woman there versus it's just a numbers game?
Yeah.
So,
that's a very great illustration of something very simple, but then you take that to something even more complex, right? And so then we do have to work on it. And it's not, you know, people have built into their, you know, societies, norms and cultural things that, you know, make, sometimes are hard to get past, right? But in the business world, you know, we have to look at each other and say, you know, we all bring value. We all want to be heard equally and have and invest equally and, you know, work together. It's just not always that easy, right? And it's an ongoing process. And I know, as you mentioned, you're still working on it, but you have made tremendous headway. And again, I applaud you for that because I know a lot of CEOs out there who would like to have a more diverse work force, but they just haven't quite gotten there yet. So, in closing, gosh, you've shared so much and I really appreciate your journey's been amazing. And like I said, I've just so enjoyed watching your company grow. And of course, because I'm in sales and work with salespeople all the time, I love the tool because it makes their life so much easier and they can find what they need quickly and the workflow improves and all the things that you mentioned earlier. But thinking about the CEOs who are listening and leaving with some ideas on growth for them to consider, some of the things that you considered as you were growing in the early days and now. Like in the early days, maybe diversity wasn't the most important thing, but as you grew larger, then it became more important. But just leave us with a couple of the things that really helped you in your thinking as you grew the company.
Yeah, I think one thing is really outbound motion for an early startup is very important because I've been advising many companies to do their outbound motion right now, given what we do. And many early companies don't stick with it long enough to see the fruits because building up an outbound motion takes time, right? You need to figure out the messaging. But if you stick with it, if you continue at it, then we will figure out what's the right messaging. It will give you a lot of returns. You have to stick with it long enough. Don't give up too early. Oh, outbound doesn't work for us.
And what do you think is long enough? Because I've seen companies give up after 3 months and I'm like, are you kidding me? Like you're barely even scratching the surface.
Exactly. It takes 3 months even to ramp up the reps, right? Then after that, you need to start testing the messaging at least a year or even maybe 2 years. So it's some investment. But you just need to go through that. If you do have a good product, you have a couple of customers, there's a lot more out there like that. Find one customer and outbound can find you 10x more, 100x more.
Yeah.
Right? It's just you have to go through the motion. So it's something that I think we did not start early enough. And I think one thing if we now, knowing what I know now, I'd probably start earlier. And speaking to many other earlier startup founders, now I'm speaking to sometimes like we were part of accelerators. So sometimes I'm invited to some of those accelerators to advise the founders, right? I think you start it as early as you can, as you have the bandwidth to build that team and then stick with it. At least give it a year or two to see the proof of it. It will work if you have to continue tweaking and iterating on it, but it will work with some iteration. So that's that because I'm pro outbound done right will be doing great. A lot of our company get here because of outbound. First customer was outbound. First investor was outbound. People come to us because we don't know them. We can't know everybody. And through outbound, right, we'll get to know each other.
Yes, yes. Yeah. That's great advice. Yeah, and once you've started that and are growing, then you can start to think more about some of the other things that you want to do, like really have a more diverse sales team or more diversity in countries, or just the type of people that you hire, but you got to get started and get going with that outbound. I agree with you. It's so important. I do think though, and Ryan did this early on too, you got to get seen, right? So you need marketing to help you get seen, stand out, right? And salespeople are not always such good writers or so good at messaging. So we need those marketing people to help us.
Totally. Yes. It's a team. It's a house. There's many different pillars to it. You have one not being there, the house will be lopsided. It will come
down.
That's right.
So,
thanks so much, Alice. Really, really appreciate being here, chatting with you. Thanks. And yeah, hope to chat again sometime soon.
Absolutely. Thanks for being on the show.
Okay.
Thanks for tuning in to Sales Talk for CEOs. You can find me at alicehyman.com. Be sure and connect with me on LinkedIn. And let me know that you heard the show. If you found value in today's episode, please subscribe, write a review, and share the show with another CEO.